Before we jump into this interview, I wanted to make mention of the fact that the interview that we're presenting is designed to provide accurate and helpful information regarding whatever the subject matter is that's being covered. But we're making this available with the understanding that we're not endeavoring to be offering specific legal, accounting, medical, financial, psychological, or other professional services. Laws and regulations are continually changing, and they can vary according to location and time. So we're just not wanting to make any kind of representation that the information here that we're offering is applicable for all locations and times. And if you need legal advice, medical advice, psychological advice, accounting advice, or whatever, obviously we want you to seek out the services of competent professionals in the area of need. But we hope this is very helpful to you, and we wish you the very best as you listen. God bless you. Well, I want to welcome you to these interviews that we're going to be engaging in here with Dr. Dale Doty. Dr. Doty, you're no stranger to the interviewing that we've done. You've done some great interviews with us in the past, and want to thank you for being with us again today.
Good. It's good to be here, Tony. We've been at the microphone together several times.
I'll say. I know most recently we did an interview on, it was the technology beast or blessing.
Uh-huh.
And we've gotten a lot of good feedback on that. And then I know a couple of years ago you did a really good three-part series with us called Sexual Sanity and Healthy Relationships. Mm-hmm. And did three excellent interviews, one on building an affair-proof marriage, another one on restoring damaged relationships, and then maintaining sexual sanity in a sex-crazed world. All those were really good, very, very helpful.
Yeah, sounds like I'm a sex freak of some sort. It seems like that's the only topic we talk about.
Well, you know, it's popular in our society, and you've done a great job with those. But, Dale, I did not bring your bio today, but suffice it to say for our audience, this is a real smart guy, a lot of accomplishments. You've been in counseling practice full-time how long?
Oh, about 35 years.
35 years, and the head of Christian Family Institute in Tulsa. Uh-huh. With how many staff counselors?
We've got 12.
12. Uh-huh. And just some great values that they stand for, and just great heart, great expertise in helping people. And I know, Dr. Doty, one of the things you've recently stepped into is the role of the president of the Oklahoma chapter of Marriage and Family Therapist?
I'm the president-elect currently of the Oklahoma Association for Marriage and Family Therapy. I've actually served in that position once before, about 20-some years ago,
mm-hmm.
but I'm back again.
All right. Well, Dr. Doty for president. We're glad you're in that role, but really appreciate you being here. And we want to talk about some things that I think are just so important for not just pastors and leaders, but for everyone. And we want to talk about personality disorders. And I might just throw out a couple things as we begin. You know, people may have varying levels of trust in psychology, analyses, and things of that nature. But we all know, whether we are trained or skilled or untrained, we all know that life is full of difficult people. And, you know, all of us, I'm sure, you know the old saying, I think everybody's abnormal except you and me, and sometimes I wonder about you.
Right.
You know, everybody has some little quirks and some little idiosyncrasies and that type of thing, but then sometimes things get, you know, more severe and that type of thing. So just how can we even look at this thing, first of all, not only from a biblical standpoint, but then taking some of the psychological understandings that have been established, how do we merge these two, and what is the validity of these classifications that we're going to be talking about today?
Well, Tony, I think that's a great question, and I think it's a good question for Christians to really think through. We have diagnostic classifications for other diseases and disorders, medical conditions. And so, you know, we hopefully know enough as physicians to be able to distinguish between the common cold and some disease that will kill you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have observed diseases long enough that by being able to recognize their symptoms, we can pretty quickly pick them out, the physicians and nurses and others, medical people who have been trained in that way. Well, we've been studying psychiatric disorder in the same way. We have been observing it and classifying it. And just as we see patterns that reemerge in medicine, we find similar patterns that emerge psychologically and psychiatrically with people. So one of those classifications that you've mentioned is the classification of personality disorder. That's distinct from some of the other categories. There are some other categories of mental illness. For instance, schizophrenia would be a diagnosis. It's a severe mental disorder. And when people are schizophrenic, I mean, they behave in some strange and bizarre ways. They often hear voices. They believe that they're seeing and hearing things that no one else can see and hear. The people who are imagining that their people are spying on them, and that there are microphones in all their walls, or, you know, people that believe that the flowers are talking to them, or mm-hmm. or they're getting secret messages through their television or whatever. I mean, those would be the characteristics of a paranoid schizophrenic. And we know that those people exist. I mean, we've seen them. They're sad cases. It's a very serious disorder. It's tragic when someone has that kind of a disorder, and it's very tragic for the family to deal with them. And that would be kind of akin to having a very, very serious and irreversible medical condition. Mm-hmm. If a person had stage 4 cancer, I mean, we would grieve. We would be saddened by the physical condition. Well, people get diseases in their mind in the same way. Well, personality disorder is a classification of actually 10 separate disorders that we have observed and are fairly confident exist. Those 10 disorders have several characteristics in common. One is that they tend to be pervasive, meaning that they affect almost every aspect of a person's life. Mm-hmm. They affect a person's inner peace or lack thereof. It affects their interpersonal relationships with family or friends. It affects their performance at school or at work. And so it affects all kinds of areas. And these disorders tend to be lifelong. They tended to have started in early childhood and typically will exist throughout a person's life. Mm-hmm. Anyone who watches television and, you know, is familiar with the television show Criminal Minds is, you know, familiar with these behavioral analysis specialists within the FBI who track criminals, and they profile those criminals from the various behaviors that they you know, exhibit. And so they essentially diagnose. I mean, in mm-hmm. fact, in reality, in real life, within the FBI, there are those who have psychology degrees, PhDs in psychology, and some of the staff on the show, you know, purport to have those kinds of training. Well, they're talking about, for the most part, antisocial personality disorder. People who behave in antisocial ways, in criminal ways, may very well fit that one category. Now, they also have talked on their show about other kinds of mental illnesses that cause people to do horrific kinds of things to other people. Well, people who have an antisocial personality disorder have characteristics of being insensitive to the values of the culture. They tend to have no shame or guilt or remorse for their actions. They really have an insensitivity to the feelings of others and will use other people and harm other people without, you know, any without holding back.
Mm-hmm. When we were having a lunch meeting recently to kind of prepare for this, I was a little bit surprised because I've not studied this much, but my assumption was a person who had the antisocial personality disorder would not come to church. They would be so antisocial, they would avoid church. But you actually indicated, if I remember correctly, that a person with this particular disorder would probably come to church or perhaps come to church and could involve themselves in a way that could bring a lot of damage and destruction to the church.
Right. Some people with antisocial personality disorder, don't appear to be crazy. They don't appear to be mentally disturbed. They can present themselves in sometimes even socially charming ways. And in fact, that's what makes some of these people very, very dangerous. They present themselves in socially appropriate ways. They can be very charming. They win people over. They win people's confidence. And then literally will steal you blind or stab you in the back.
Okay.
And so
I think every pastor has probably dealt with that some.
I would guess. I mean, we figure that this kind of thing probably happens in 1 out of 100 people, maybe a little less than that. And so I mean, if we gather 1,000 people together, we can probably expect that we have some people with antisocial personality disorder within our midst. Mm-hmm. And it's not entirely unheard of that some people aspire to leadership and do so out of more manipulative motives than sincere spiritual motives. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not to say that a person couldn't be a Christian and have antisocial personality disorder. As I said earlier, all these personality disorders, we believe that most of them started in early childhood, that something went terribly, terribly wrong in the upbringing of this person. Their mind did not develop in the normal way that most people's minds develop. And so they're missing certain aspects, such as empathy for other people. And so they simply don't have feelings for other people who have hurt feelings or whatever. Mm-hmm. And that may be the case with many of the personality disorders that they started. Some of the people with personality disorders had abusive and sometimes horribly abusive backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And some people ended up with inattentive parents, or, you know, a phenomenon that we see a lot today are children who fail to attach to parents, particularly parents who may be drug abusers. Mm-hmm. That when an infant cries, a normal infant expects that there will be some kind of empathetic response on the part of a caregiver. But some of these children grow up in homes where there simply is no maternal warmth or mm-hmm. attention or whatever. And that really does have a profound effect on the developing mind and personality. And those people often are not trusting and don't learn reciprocal response. Mm-hmm. They didn't have an empathetic caregiver, and they don't learn to have empathy for others. It wasn't shown to them, and they don't learn it.
But yet you say they can be very charming.
Very, 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 particularly some of these personality disorders. That may be true of the antisocial. An antisocial person may choose to use you and abuse you and do it deliberately. I mean, they may have a sinister motive for why they're doing what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Some of the other personality disorders where people can be very charming might be borderline personality disorder. People who have this kind of a personality disorder may also appear initially very charming and very likable and very warm. And yet what you don't know is that as the relationship goes on and as it becomes more intimate, it will also become more volatile. Mm-hmm. And relationships with people with this personality disorder are characterized by incredible ups and downs and, you know, outbursts and hostility. And, you know, and literally one of the books written about it is a book entitled I Hate You, Don't Leave Me. Mm-hmm. And the title kind of picks up on the way in which a person with borderline personality disorder thinks. One minute they are in love with you, they can't live without you, they're, you know, they think you're the best thing on earth, and the next minute they literally hate you and want to scratch your eyes out. Mm-hmm. So this incredible volatility, and people who have that disorder suffer horribly. They don't find peace in relationships, and there just simply is no peace in their life. Mm-hmm. If they're by themselves, they're not at peace, and if they're with people, they're not at peace.
Mm-hmm. I somewhere read, Dr. Doty, that individuals with borderline personality disorder are among the most frustrating for counselors. Is that correct, or is that
I think it is. And in fact, I think a lot of counselors kind of dread dealing with borderline personality disorder because of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of these, particularly therapists that have not had a lot of training or experience or supervision, who try to see clients with this characteristic, I mean, they're so manipulative and so controlling, mm-hmm. and can become extremely dependent and, I mean, literally.
And then they turn around and use a lot of guilt against the counselor. And aren't they sometimes seductive as well?
Right. That's another characteristic of people with borderline personality disorder is that, you know, they may be quick to become intimate with people or to offer an inappropriate level of intimacy and often are unhappy no matter what you do,
mm-hmm.
no matter how much you care, no matter how much you go out of your way. You know, they may be ungrateful, but again, it's driven by this incredible inner unrest.
Mm-hmm.
But it is difficult for people who have not been properly trained to see people like this. You have to have very clear boundaries,
mm-hmm.
because literally a borderline personality disorder will call you in the middle of the night, you know, and develop a dependency where they're in a crisis constantly and expecting you to rescue them.
And if you help them, you're the greatest person in the world. But if you set up a boundary, then you've abandoned them and you're
right.
just like all the other evil people who've
right.
let them down.
Right. And so obviously each one of these personality disorders, there are varying levels of intensity. There are some who are worse than others. I mean, not all people with antisocial personality disorder belong in prison. Not everyone who has it has committed, you know, criminal acts. But it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not everyone with borderline personality disorder, you know, is involved in promiscuous relationships or, you know, what have you. But those are not uncommon characteristics.
Okay. Let me throw out a couple of scenarios and see if you have any comment on these. I don't know a lot about this, but the BTK killer or murder up in Wichita, he was murdering all these people, and yet he was a high-level official in his church. I think in whatever denomination he was a part of, he was the president of the church. I don't understand that particular governmental structure, but, I mean, it sounds like he was a very high-ranking, respected individual, and yet obviously had this very dark and sinister side.
There are a variety of other forms of mental disorder which may also contribute, and that's one of the things, too, that makes this complicated. A person with any one of these mental disorders may also suffer from others simultaneously, what we call comorbidity.
Mm-hmm.
And so a person may not only, you know, be able to be charming and behave appropriately in social circumstances, but they may also have periods of time in which they deteriorate into really psychotic kinds of thinking, for
mm-hmm.
instance. And so they may go through incredible vacillations. They may suffer from an obsessional disorder. And so what you see when someone is obsessional is they may follow or stalk or, you know, track people or...
I know pastors who have been stalked.
Uh-huh. And you, again, on TV or in the movies or in the news even, you will find that when they go to the homes of people with some of those characteristics, their walls are plastered with the pictures
mm-hmm.
of the people that they have, you know, followed and stalked and maybe even harmed or raped or whatever, mm-hmm. you know. And so they cannot keep their mind off of their dark behaviors.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about the individual and a lot of pastors are familiar with this scenario. Somebody comes into their church, they're new, very charming, very pleasant. They flatter profusely. They come up and tell the pastor how wonderful he is. He's the most anointed preacher they've ever heard. This is the most wonderful church. And they're just, you know, ingratiating themselves to everyone. And because of their eagerness and zealousness and cheerfulness and positiveness, they tend to rise rather quickly in their acceptance and favor, and perhaps will step into volunteer positions and very often climb quickly through the ranks. And as they get more and more people under their influence, then there's this turn and they become very critical. They undermine, they sabotage, they usurp. And when it becomes toxic in the church, then at that point, maybe the pastor will think, we better find out where this person came from. And they make some calls and find out, you know, this is the fourth church they've done this to.
Right.
You know, that same kind of pattern. Would that fit in?
If this is a pervasive pattern that has kind of that follows a person through their lifetime, yes. I mean, that might very well be borderline personality disorder, for instance. You described a number of the characteristics of borderline. Again, the charming, I love you, but then later, you know, rallying people against you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so one minute I love you, the next I hate you.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, many people in these categories are highly manipulative, and though whether they're consciously aware of the seductive aspect of it, that pouring on the praise is very seductive. It disarms people, mm-hmm. and people tend to trust quickly, as you described, which is a message both to those, not only to recognize some of these disorders, but to be very careful in our getting to know other people. That to really know a person takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter how well it goes in the beginning, it doesn't necessarily predict, you know, how it will go in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So being patient and going slow and getting to know people and watching whether or not they are trustworthy and that what they say and what they do match up is an important quality, whether we're dating someone or whether we're selecting people for, you know, inclusion in ministry or what have you.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Doty, I was thinking about when you were describing some of those traits earlier, human nature, by my observation, appears not to have changed a whole lot over the centuries. People are people. Sin is sin. Rebellion is rebellion. Immaturity is immaturity. And Psalm 55 describes an interpersonal relationship. And the way it describes it, Psalm 55:20 says, "He has put forth his hands against those who were at peace with him. He has broken his covenant. The words of his mouth were smoother than butter, but war was in his heart. His words were softer than oil, yet they were drawn swords." And a little bit earlier in that same psalm, it says, "It was not an enemy who reproaches me, then I could bear it, nor is it one who hates me, who has exalted himself against me, then I could hide from him. But it was you, a man my equal, my companion, my acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked to the house of God in the throng," or in, you know, partnership with others. And here's a situation that sounds like it could be a story that's told in any church in America today, where someone comes in, has all these charming traits, the pastor and everybody else trusts them, and then the next thing you know, this agenda shows up, which is very injurious, very hurtful, very damaging. And how many people have been hurt by individuals that, you know, conduct themselves in this exact same way that was described a couple thousand years ago?
Right. I don't think these behaviors that we have classified as personality disorders are new behaviors at all. We've just developed a language for it. We may be a little better. You know, those of us that are trained in the mental health areas are a little better at being able to recognize it than we once were able to. Even 20 years ago, we didn't have the language that we have today that has kind of made it more simple and easy to recognize some of these things. So the behavior's always been around, you know, and I think it's the one good thing about the knowledge we have today from psychology is we can pass that knowledge along to others. we can warn others that this exists. And again, as we have these conversations, many people who are listening are going to realize they have had encounters with people with personality disorders. They have been wounded by them, or maybe they have just been, you know, troubled in their attempts to help people who don't seem to get better. Some people who show no desire to get better. They're perfectly content with their very extremely dysfunctional life. And so when we come across people like that, those behaviors on their part are not new. Mm-hmm. And as you say, some of these people brought some of those bad behaviors out of other churches. I'm reminded a few years ago when there was a couple in a church that I attended that were caught stealing. I mean, the church had gone out of their way to show benevolence to them and kindness to them, and they took that kindness, and then they stole more. Mm-hmm. They would go into a Bible study, into a couple's home or whatever, where there were other couples, and before the night was over, several of the women's purses had been stolen from. And so monies would be missing, and then all of a sudden people are beginning to be suspicious of one mm-hmm. another, who's doing this or yeah. whatever.
That sounds like a setup for some kind of whodunit.
Yeah, that's right. And in these cases, the whodunit was ultimately identified. The common thread was identified. And then there was some investigation as to their past, and come to find out they had been in several other churches where they had behaved in similar ways. Mm-hmm. There are some who, particularly those who are antisocial, who realize that Christians are actually good victims. Mm-hmm. We tend to be naive. We tend to not be very careful. And we tend to believe the best about people, you know, without even keeping up any guard at all, and ultimately can end up victims of those that are very, very troubled mm-hmm. or literally use others mm-hmm. by intention.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are warnings all through Scripture. We all want to take that very positive because we want to be positive people. We want to be hopeful. We want to believe the best in everyone. And we certainly don't want to be paranoid and that type of thing. But Jesus himself told the disciples, beware of men. They're going to do these certain things to you.
Right.
Paul, talking to Timothy, said, Alexander the coppersmith has done me much harm. And he said, you need to watch out for this guy.
Right.
You know, so Jesus and Paul were, you know, they weren't a Pollyanna hyper-optimistic. They realized there's bad people who are going to try to hurt you, and you have to take some precautions to guard yourself. And I think having some of these understandings can help toward that end.
And some of these characteristics of troubled behavior may exist in people that do not have a personality disorder. So once again, those of us that are trained in diagnosing and treating mental disorder, we have to meet certain criteria in order to be able to make those diagnoses. So the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of the American Psychiatric Association is kind of the standard document that we use in the mental health circles to see if people meet the criterion. And for most of these disorders, there may be 10 or 12 different things that have to be present. Some people may have a few of these without all of them. And again, in order to diagnose it a personality disorder, it's not an isolated incident of bad behavior. It's a history. It's a lifelong history of bad behavior or dysfunctional behavior. Mm-hmm. So we do want to be careful not to throw labels on people,
right.
You know, without really being careful to know what we're dealing with.
And really, a lay person, a person who's not trained in the capacities you're speaking of, shouldn't even be attempting to diagnose people at all.
Right. You and I, over lunch recently, talked about some other passages of Scripture, one being 1 Thessalonians 5:14. And there are several different translations, and you and I looked at some of those. But to admonish the unruly, to encourage the timid, help the weak, but be patient with all. Mm-hmm. The unruly, in my understanding, are those who kind of should know what's right to do, but they're not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those people that really should know right from wrong, but they're not doing what's right and wrong from wrong, those people need to be confronted. Mm-hmm. They need to be rebuked. They need to be admonished. And frankly, we need to see repentance from them, not only an acknowledgement of the wrong, but also a willingness to change behavior. But we need to be patient with everyone, because we do encounter lots of damaged, wounded people who are troubled, who are coming to church looking for help, you know, and are looking for love, and they're looking for connection, and there may even be a part of them that wants to do the right thing. And some of the people we minister to will respond well to admonition and to love and correction. Mm-hmm. And other people will turn right around and stab you in the back in the very next minute. Mm-hmm. And we have to ultimately learn, you know, what kind of person is this that we're dealing with, and deal with them appropriately.
Mm-hmm. You know, pastors learn a lot of these things through experience. They've got the scars to prove it.
Right.
But I sure think it can be helpful to, you know, get some of this understanding, get some of this knowledge, to be a little bit more aware of when to protect themselves. You know, pastors want to help people. And I like that verse that you mentioned, 1 Thessalonians 5:14. The New King James says, "We exhort you, brethren, to warn those who are unruly." I think uses the same phrase. "Comfort the faint-hearted." And I'm wondering if that's where the King James says, and I always kind of like that translation, "Comfort the feeble-minded." And I don't know what the Greek says here or anything, but uphold the weak, be patient with all. And so pastors really need to know, who can you help, who wants help, who do you have to watch out for?
Right.
Because there's some people you want to really go the extra mile with in mercy, but then there's other people that you just flat need to guard yourself against. So what are some of the keys that, even if a pastor can't, you know, clinically diagnose all this stuff, you know, what are some of the keys that a pastor should look for when, you know, the Bible talks about, you know, wolves in sheep's clothing, you know, the pastor's responsibility to guard the flock and things like that? You know, we've talked about the antisocial, we've talked about the borderline. Are there other traits of other disorders that would send up the protective instincts of a pastor?
Well, probably another one that we encounter, and probably can even think back and remember people that have crossed our paths. One is the narcissistic personality disorder.
Okay.
And a person who is a narcissist, it comes from the old Greek story, the mythology of Narcissus, who looked in the pool of water and saw his reflection and fell in love with his own reflection.
And spent his whole life pursuing himself.
Right. And so that's kind of the humor behind this disorder. But it's not funny if you have it or if you have been victimized by those who have it. People who have this disorder are always right. Their perspective is the right perspective. They're never wrong, and they never receive correction. They often respond very angrily or in a very hostile manner to anyone who would suggest that they might not be right. Mm-hmm. And so they tend to dominate interaction and be very pushy with their opinion, and others get real uncomfortable around people with this particular disorder. And like all the personality disorders, you can't really get close and sustain a very intimate relationship with someone who has any kind of personality disorder, and certainly this one.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've seen people, lots of people, who have been wounded by narcissistic parents. The parent that simply is always right, and even into people's adulthood, as adults relate to their adult parent, those parents are still domineering and controlling their lives. And I mean, and even worse yet, a narcissist who has money, you know, uses money to manipulate people to do what they want, even if what they want is harmful, and they find people's vulnerabilities. And, You know, and so, and Christians really struggle if you have a parent with narcissistic qualities or even a leader with narcissistic qualities, because we as Christians believe that our that we should honor our parents, for instance, or honor mm-hmm. leaders. And so we tend to submit to people who are in this kind of very selfish and domineering and controlling, you know, behavior, to the point where we're ourselves uncomfortable and mm-hmm. eventually find the circumstance intolerable.
Mm-hmm. Paint a picture for me of a narcissist in a church setting. What's that going to look like?
They're bossy. They want to be the center of attention. They seek out positions where they can, you know, where they have the floor, where they speak sometimes very eloquently and maybe very intelligent, but there's just a little bit of a quirk about, there's a lack of empathy is one of the characteristics. Mm-hmm. So though they speak as though they have the truth, they have virtually no empathy or kindness or whatever.
It sounds like you're describing a human steamroller.
Uh-huh. It can be. The Bible talks about speak the truth in love. These people don't understand what that is, literally, cannot understand that. The idea of speaking truth with kindness or compassion or empathy or understanding, those characteristics are absolutely missing. Mm-hmm. And if you're on a committee with someone like this, there's only going to be one right way that's ever going to please them. Mm-hmm. And if the committee should dare, you know, vote in a different direction, they often quit. And they quit out of anger, and they quit claiming they were not appreciated. Mm-hmm. They retaliate against anyone who tends to disagree. Parents, adults who have parents who are like this, nothing you ever do will ever be good enough because it's not what they want you to do. Until they're completely in control of your life, they will never be satisfied.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So some other traits, adjectives, characteristics would be things, the word self-absorbed would be correct, self-indulgent. They use people for their own means. You know, I'm thinking of people in history that I've read about. Teddy Roosevelt, I have a book ordered about him. I've not read it yet, but I heard that his daughter said about him that he just absolutely loved being the center of attention. And I'm not saying he's a narcissist. I have no idea. But she said he loved being the center of attention so much that at every wedding he was jealous that he was not the bride, and that at every funeral he was upset that he was not the corpse because he just had to be the center of attention. You know, are there people who just maybe they have a real high self-esteem and high sense of self-confidence and they're not necessarily negative about it, but they, without being narcissistic or?
Sure. Well, I think, again, all these kind of fit on a continuum. And there are people who have some of these characteristics who don't meet the standard of having the personality disorder. So we talk about people with narcissistic qualities, and those people may not be as severe as these with the personality disorder. But with the personality disorder, there is a great sense of grandiosity. I mean, it's not just inflated self-esteem. It's grandiose. Mm-hmm. I mean, they see themselves as the most intelligent, and they really believe they are the most intelligent person in the room. Mm-hmm. They believe that they have special gifts and special insights that no one else has. Mm-hmm. And they seek to find positions where they get the attention of other people.
Well, and when you were saying that, I was just thinking, this disorder of narcissism sounds like it is tailor-made for leaders.
And in fact, we do see unhealthy leaders who aspire to leadership out of this being driven by this personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And so we've seen military leaders seek positions. We've seen political leaders seek positions due to this disorder. They wound everyone. They drive everyone off. Literally, of one narcissist that I'm aware of, even in the mental health circles, it was said that they fired every disciple. So no matter how devoted their disciples might be, those that came along beside to help, they fired every one of them. They had no loyalty to anyone and never valued any of those people enough to hold on to them or show loyalty to them.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like you're describing a situation where in their path, in their wake, are just countless wounded and hurt people.
Right. And I certainly don't want to suggest that the pastorate necessarily attracts more of these people than other positions of leadership. But I do believe that there is some element of, there is a frequency about that, mm-hmm. that leadership is just the perfect resting place for a person with grandiosity. And so if a person isn't humble and isn't driven by healthy motives, they can be very abusive and hurtful leaders. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you know, I have known of pastors that seem to have this quality, and almost every staff member that ever left wounded.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, many never served again, never mm-hmm. served a church again,
mm-hmm.
you know, having worked under such a person. Mm-hmm. And those are tragic, horrible, sad things. I mean, they don't happen every day, and we sure wouldn't want to make generalizations about people based on that. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's a possibility.
Yeah. And it is important, as you're kind of qualifying this now, there can be people who are strong leaders and firm leaders and resolute that are not narcissistic, obviously.
Right.
There is a biblical passage I think is very interesting, a little epistle that hardly anyone ever reads, 3 John. John writes, "I wrote to the church, but Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence." And I think that's that to me just sounds like classic textbook narcissism.
Yes.
Diotrephes, who loves to have the preeminence among them, does not receive us. In other words, it's going to be his way or no way. And
to share the platform or to share the podium or to share the teaching or to suggest mm-hmm. that this person coming into town, Paul, that wrote half the New Testament, might have something to contribute would be simply unacceptable mm-hmm. to a person who struggles with this kind of a disorder.
Mm-hmm. And he goes on to say here about him, he says, "If I come, I will call to mind his deeds, which he does, prating against us." So they've got to assassinate the character of everyone who isn't celebrating their ego exaltation, prating against us with malicious words. "And not content with that, he himself does not receive the brethren and forbids those who wish to, putting them out of the church." So we're seeing a complete control freak here,
right,
who has to be the top dog.
And I think that assassination of the character of other valuable people is definitely a characteristic of narcissism. They cannot share leadership. They have to be top dog. They have to be in control. And so they fire gifted people. They don't surround themselves by gifted people and value them.
They become a threat.
Uh-huh.
Do you remember the Star Wars? Are you a Star Wars fan?
Oh, yeah.
And I can't remember all the episode numbers. I think this would be number 3 in the 6-part series. But when the Emperor is talking to young Anakin Skywalker, he's talking about a Sith Lord who became so powerful that the only thing he feared was losing his power. And I thought that, you know, again, fits this. Uh-huh. Quite well.
Yeah. Well, those are just 3 of the common personality disorders, and there are many others that we might explore as well. Some of them are not as likely to be seen in leadership positions. There are some of the people with these personality disorders that are not likely to seek out relationships with anyone. One of the ones that's kind of at the opposite end of the continuum from the ones that we just described are people with what's known as a schizoid personality disorder. And people with schizoid personality disorder are fairly odd. They tend to be very withdrawn, socially isolated. They seek no relationships with others. They find no pleasure in relationships with others. They have a very flat affect. They show very little range of response to human conditions. And so when circumstances normally would arouse compassion, they feel no compassion. When circumstances might be humorous and some would laugh, they would have probably no laughter. Mm-hmm. And so very, very flat, very, very isolated, often live alone, prefer solitary activities. And it's unlikely that these people are going to step foot in the church without someone compelling them or pushing them or bringing them. And given half a chance, given a choice, they would choose not to come or engage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's say there's a pastor listening to this, and we're obviously, the purpose of this is not to turn anybody into a qualified diagnostician or anything of that nature. But let's say a pastor's wanting to get a little bit better grip on these different personality disorders, recognizing them, knowing and having some of the wisdom necessary to, you know, help as much as possible the ones that can be helped and protect themselves and perhaps others from ones who would be very harmful. And the Bible, again, talks about certain people who are scorners. You know, that when you cast out the scorner, the strife will cease. And obviously the biblical semantics and terminologies are all different, but they're dealing with problem people who are either helped or removed so as not to cause further damage. But what could a pastor read? Do you have any particular recommendations on things that are written that would be helpful?
Well, I think you can even go to the internet to reliable sources. If you look up personality disorder on sites like WebMD or the National Institute of Mental Health, those sites have extensive descriptions of some of these things that we're talking about. So you can learn about them from the psychological side. And then certainly the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual that I made reference to, it's in its fourth edition, so it's DSM-4-TR. It's a text revision, is its current edition. We will probably see another one in another 2 or 3 or 4 years. But that's our best understanding at this point. Not a bad book to have on the shelf in a church's library, particularly a large church, where people could go and refer to it, mm-hmm. to look up something, to find out what really are the characteristics of people with some of these problem areas. Even may help us to make referrals. Mm-hmm. Now, again, you know, psychotherapy has kind of minimal effectiveness in dealing with some of these people. And so sometimes, as you say, the correct response is to set boundaries, to set limits, to have rules for what these people are allowed to do in the church, and where there is discipline if they step outside mm-hmm. the boundaries that have been given to them.
Mm-hmm. I know Marshall Shelley wrote a book years ago specifically for pastors called Well-Intentioned Dragons. It was not from a clinical standpoint whatsoever, but I thought very helpful in many ways.
I think so too.
There's a book, we've got it right here on the table in front of us, called Overcoming the Dark Side of Leadership. The subtitle is How to Become an Effective Leader by Confronting Potential Failures. And it deals with the narcissistic issues that we talked about and presents a real interesting case study of Solomon as a narcissistic leader. And I don't know how everybody's going to respond to that, but when you look at Solomon, when he was in some of his darker days, how that he said, I will withhold nothing from me that my heart desires, and a guy that, you know, really just did not understand the meaning of the word enough. You know, you just could not satisfy his cravings. He had 700 wives and 300 concubines, and when he died, his kingdom really was in shambles because the people had been worked horrifically and taxed horrifically to sustain his incredible sense of self-indulgence.
Right.
So it's an interesting thought.
I mean, when you ultimately use your people for your own selfish purposes, when you leave a kingdom basically bankrupt because of the excesses, when people's own backs are broken, basically, to serve or to follow the leadership of such a person. I mean, that's pretty close to narcissism.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that gets pretty close.
Yeah. Well, we've really done a full session here. I feel like there's a need for some kind of disclaimer here, and I've kind of alluded to it a time or two. You have as well, but and I didn't bring the formal written out disclaimer, but you know, none of this is all meant to be general in nature. We're not giving this to, you know, have people diagnosing anybody, have a good, you know, professional person involved if you feel that's necessary. Any other disclaimer you think's appropriate?
Well, I think that we share this information to help people understand others. And not necessarily to use this information, you know, as justification for cutting people off or being, you know, judgmental toward people or, as you say, even diagnosing or putting labels on people. Even those of us in the mental health professionals often are reluctant to use labels to describe troubled people. We may describe characteristics of troubled behavior. But I do believe that it can be helpful and even comforting to know that there are disorders that explain why people behave in the ways that they do, particularly the ways that are so hurtful to others. And so maybe we've shed a little bit of light on that, and maybe we'll have an opportunity to shed a little more light.
Well, we'll be back for round two.